knocks it out to Ananobi. DiVincenzo a three. Bang! Bang! Knicks take a one-point lead with 13 seconds remaining.
Defender falls. LeBron three. Rebound by Porter. Denver with the timeout. We are tied.
I love it. Don't call it. Tie ball game. Worst can happen. We go to overtime.
Murray makes a move. Game's on.
The Nuggets have won!
Two very exciting games in NBA playoffs last night. So see, this is after people were complaining about the first day or one of the days NBA games where they're all blowouts. It's like these things go in cycles. Not every single game is going to be a blowout. And people tend to overreact, as we know. Oh, NBA's so boring. Oh, this is blowouts. Well, that was one day. NFL has weeks where they're not great games sometimes. Sometimes there's great games. Happens in every league. But last night, two of the three games were absolutely sensational and exciting. And the Nuggets win at the buzzer. And you heard the Knicks beat the Sixers after they're down five with a minute to go. Some wild and crazy stuff. And have to admit, I enjoyed watching some of that last night. That's real basketball. When the guys care, they try, they hustle, they get extra possessions, they dive on the floor. The regular season is hard to watch. The playoffs is a completely different animal. Welcome to the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive and Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Nuggets cap a wild night in the playoffs last night. They beat the Lakers on that game-winning shot at the buzzer by Jamal Murray, guarded by Anthony Davis. It was a heck of a shot. 101-99 is the final, and the Lakers had a 20-point lead at one point in the second half. Denver gets the fadeaway at the buzzer for Murray to go up 2-0 in the series. The win gives the Nuggets that 2-0 lead. Going back to L.A., it extends their winning streak over the Lakers to 10 in a row. And the Nuggets starters, who entered the game last night, 36-0 as a unit when they played a Western Conference team at home, kept that streak alive. They've now won 38 in a row when their starters are all intact against a Western Conference team in Denver. Jokic had just an average night, 27 points, 20 rebounds, and 10 assists. That's a crazy thing. Jokic can have a night where he's not great, and he wasn't great last night. 27, 20, and 10. Earlier in the night in the East, DiVincenzo, I can't even say his name, hit a three-pointer with 13 seconds left to put the Knicks up one, as you heard. 104-101 was the final. Knicks take the 2-0 series lead going back to Philly. Sixers had a five-point lead with under a minute to go. Joel Embiid, former Jayhawk, with 34 points and 10 rebounds. Meanwhile, Tyrese Maxey had a game-high 35 points, 9 rebounds, 10 assists, just missed a triple-double. Knicks win despite Jalen Brunson, their star play, going 8 of 29 from the floor. After the game, though, for both the Lakers and the Nuggets and the Knicks and the Sixers, officiating complaining. Complaining about the officiating. LeBron went off. Laker players went off, even though they got, during the regular season, way more free throw attempts and calls all year long. And actually, it's happened the last couple years. But they were upset. And I will say, I don't, you know, challenging a foul call in the NBA is kind of interesting to me. And sometimes they overturn. I happen to be watching where LeBron put a chicken wing into Murray going to the hoop. Should have been offensive foul. Of course, they're not going to call it. And Murray slapped the ball away from LeBron off his hand. And they called a foul on Murray. Murray immediately reviewed it. They reviewed it, and it clearly showed Murray didn't foul. So they overturned it, and Nuggets got the ball. So that was the right, correct overturn. But then later in the game, D'Angelo Russell's going to the hoop. Michael Porter Jr. tries to block the shot. He's clean initially, but then comes across on the follow-through, hits Russell in the face. The Nuggets challenge the call, and it is overturned. I didn't think you could smack somebody in the face. I thought that was a foul. They actually went to the monitor, reviewed it, saw that. They had to have seen Porter's hand strike Russell in the face and overturned the call. And the Lakers were up double digits. That would have given two more free throws. Russell was an 82% foul shooter. So LeBron James said after the game, what are we effing doing here? Like, this replay stuff. I mean, that's... They called it a marginal call. Well, a marginal call is still a foul. They didn't say it was the wrong call. They just said marginal. But everybody in America saw you got hit across the face. I think everybody in America would say, that's a foul. I don't think you're allowed to do that. So, yeah, I understand some of the complaining there by the Lakers. At the same time, LeBron settles for a three-pointer with 13 seconds left. Could have ran it down to 4 seconds. That's not smart basketball on LeBron's part.
No.
And he settled for a three, and he missed. And then the Nuggets had plenty of time to not call a timeout, which was smart. Don't let the defense get set. Hit the game winner. So You know, here's the thing. When LeBron complains about the officiating, and I understand what he's talking about, and then Embiid was very critical of the officiating last night, which I don't disagree. Tyrese Maxey got the ball. They show the replays. He's literally being pulled from behind. His jersey's being pulled straight back.
Mm-hmm.
That's a foul.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't called, and then he hits the deck, loses the ball. Knicks get it. Wild scramble. Hit a three and go up one. The Sixers are up two. They inbound the ball cleanly. They're the best free throw shooting team in the league at 82%. They get the ball in. They hit two free throws. That game's over. Instead, they get the ball in. Maxey is being pulled from behind by the jersey. Okay? And he then eventually falls down, and the Knicks wild scramble, get a three-pointer, take the lead. And during the time, before they even inbounded the ball, Nick Nurse, the head coach, is near the officials calling for a timeout, which every official has to know. If you don't get it in late in the game, you know they're going to probably call a timeout. They ignored him.
Mm-hmm.
So the Sixers have a right to be upset today as well, no doubt. Having said that, I had a friend of mine say a long time ago, and I've said it on the show before, who are the people that complain about officiating?
The losers.
The losers. You don't hear the Nuggets complaining about all the calls that went against them last night.
No.
But there were. You're not hear the Knicks complain about calls that went against them, because there were. Winners aren't complaining. Complaining is for losers, as some people would tell me. But in sports, the losing team is the one that's always mad and upset. But, you know, once again, I'm not going to sit here and say officials are perfect. They're not. Did they miss some things last night that seemed to be kind of obvious? Yes. But it all happens very quickly. They don't have the benefit. We do. Of slow motion. Okay? A quick tug of the jersey might not be apparent in live time as it is when it's slow mode and like, wow, that was a pretty egregious pull of the jersey. Whatever it might be. But like we talk about, I'm sure LeBron missed some shots last night. He wasn't perfect. Pretty sure Embiid missed some shots last night. He wasn't perfect. I'm going to guess that nobody on the floor was perfect. So it is interesting how we look at all these things. The bottom line is the Nuggets are up 2-0. Lakers are in deep trouble, but they're going home. The Sixers are down 2-0. Could have easily won the first two. Didn't. Now they go back home. And then the game that was totally ignored was the Cavaliers winning over the Magic last night, 96-86. They go up 2-0 in that best of seven, but that series shifts back to Orlando. So the home teams in the series last night held serve game one and two, and they're all three up 2-0 in the series.
Yeah, it's still wild to me that you can challenge fouls. That's just,
I know,
like,
me
it's,
too.
For
I
me,
know.
It's like in my mind, you know, we're complaining about all this stuff, but it's still this crazy that you can even challenge a foul.
I think it's wild you can overturn a foul and actually look at the replay, see a guy hit in the face, and say that's marginal.
Yeah, just all of it is just like...
Like LeBron said, what are we doing?
I don't disagree.
What are we doing?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of times I think LeBron's a little out there sometimes in those kind of things, but I mean, I don't disagree with him on this.
No,
it's hard to actually be like, oh, just be quiet. Nothing happened. It happened.
It did.
But it's like, but the whole process is just kind of weird to me because it's like, I don't think you can't do that at any other level.
No.
So
you can't challenge ball strike call.
Exactly. That's like the that's
and if you
weird
did, Angel like, Hernandez would be like, oh my god, he get challenged on every call.
Yeah, it's like some of the most common things that are, you know, part of the game are not challengeable in a lot of areas.
The NFL tried it with pass interference,
yeah,
and it was a horrible train wreck. And so they just said, okay, that's silly.
Yeah,
because you could challenge every call. That's a hold. That's not a hold.
Yeah, that's
like the
I'm
Eagles
saying.
Could have challenged
like,
whether
challenge,
that was a hold in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you can't challenge holding calls.
Like judgment calls.
Calls, for the most part, you can't challenge calls.
Right.
Like, you know, fouls, which would be penalties in the NFL, but fouls in the NBA, right?
Right.
That's what's wild to me.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Tonight, the three more games on the schedule. The Timberwolves are up 1-0. They host the Suns in the West at 6:30. At 9 o'clock, Clippers up 1-0. Take on the Mavericks in Game 2 in the East at 7:30. The Bucks have a 1-0 series lead. They try to take a 2-0 lead as they host the Pacers Game 2 in Milwaukee. Keith Dracine will be with us here in just a little bit. But first, let's recap local sports results from yesterday. Must say, super scintillating, super tight. I was on the edge of my seat. Wasn't sure if Beloit could pull those out against Repco yesterday.
Yeah, it's been a tough year for Public County. There's no question
pretty much
about
every
that.
Sport.
Yeah. And so,
and I feel for him.
Yeah,
I really, truly do.
Yeah. And so, yeah, Beloit baseball winning the first game 23-0 in three innings and took the second game 18-0 in three innings. So Beloit, two wins there, then 11-5 on the season and 6-2 in the North Central Activities Association with those victories yesterday there in Beloit. Only other thing really on the immediate area schedule, the Concordia Golf Invitational, and Concordia, they cruised to the home win. 325 was the lowest score there over Wamego in second, 358 team score. And Concordia had the top five individual scores. So it was Lennon Neinmeier winning the championship with an 80. Luke Donovan, Lewis Van Meter each had an 81 and finished in second and third, respectively. You can find the full results for that at ncksports.com. Also, coming up today, high school athletics, the Rock Hills Golf Invitational this afternoon at 1 o'clock in Mankato. Lakeside, Rock Hills, St. John's, Tipton, Pike Valley, and Southern Cloud from the area are competing. And then in baseball and softball today, Sylvan Lucas is at home. Sylvan Lucas Lincoln Baseball hosting Ellsworth starting at 3 o'clock this afternoon. The Sylvan Lucas softball team has Nest City at home at 4 o'clock. Baseball is in Lucas for their games, and softball in Sylvan Grove. And then also Concordia is at Abilene today in both baseball and softball. 4:30 start times in the NCKL this afternoon. And that's what's on the docket here for today. And the full local schedules can always be found at ncksports.com.
I want to give a shout out to Sandy McBlair as she delivered, and this is a gigantic mistake on my part that I'm even bringing this up, because I should have hid this in my office so Dusty had no idea this existed, but it's a big old plate of double chocolate. Looks like brownies to me. Oh, dear heavens of thankfulness. I have not had breakfast yet. This looks extremely good. Looks definitely sugar-free compared to the fiber brownies that you and I usually
eat. It's like,
eat.
Yeah, they're not as healthy as the ones we normally have.
Oh, no, no. Sandy told me there was no calories.
Sometimes that's good.
They're non-calorie, non-sugar, double chocolate brownies. Is that even possible? I would say no, but I'm willing to see what they taste like. I'm just going to take a, like half the deal just to try it. I always have this thing with my kids when they're like, they want something, they think it looks good, and I'm trying something, and I say, oh my God, this is horrible. You don't want this. This is nasty. It tastes horrible. It's so bad, I'm just to protect you, I'm going to have some more, so you don't, and they know I'm full of baloney, of course. So yeah, well, thank you, Sandy, for bringing in the sweet treats here this morning for breakfast. In 30 seconds, we'll tell you who the new girls basketball coach is over at Beloit High, and we'll hear from that coach.
I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Did you know that we sell tires? We also perform alignments and all the other services that go along with them. We handle all the top brands. Extras like road hazard warranty, complimentary tire rotations, and complimentary tire repairs are available for purchase on most tires. Right now, we are offering $80 off when you buy a set of four. Call or stop by Kiever Brothers Automotive for fast, friendly tire services today. Find us just south of the courthouse in Beloit or on the web at KieverBrothers.com.
All right, pretty expected, I think, if you're close to what's taking place over at Beloit, but a very familiar name is going to be back on the sidelines as a head coach at the high school level. Keith Kersine had been coaching at Beloit for the junior high boys, done a wonderful job with them, and appreciate everything he did with our son, Elijah, who has Down syndrome. I have a special place in my heart for Keith and his family. I think a lot of people that have played for Keith Kersine have a special place in their heart for him, and they appreciate everything he does for youth. And he then was an assistant also on the girls' basketball team this past season. And now, Dusty, he slides into the hot chair.
Yeah, head coach of the Beloit Lady Trojans, as obviously this pending board approval at the May meeting, but I don't think that's going to have any issue passing, obviously, if they're putting all this info out.
I would hope not. So,
Keith Kersine, the new head coach of the Beloit Lady Trojan basketball team. Yeah, we obviously, Keith, here's something people might not know. Keith and I actually have the same godfather. He's passed away, my Uncle Ed, but so I've always had an interesting connection with Keith, too, before I even actually knew him. I had a connection with him. So Keith obviously has worked with us a lot over the past years. It was time at St. John's Tipton. He led that Lady Jays basketball team for 12 seasons to a record of 218-63 and a state championship in 182 back in 2015 and four state tournament appearances. So that's just his pedigree on the basketball court. So he brings a lot, was an assistant with Coach Remus last year, and so, yeah, Keith Kersine, head coach of the Lady Trojan basketball team.
Yeah, he'll take over for Shauna Remus. If you didn't know, she resigned recently and after 7 years at the helm. So Keith Kersien is new head coach of the Beloit girls basketball program. And Dusty had a chance to catch up with Coach Kersien yesterday.
And welcome back here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94. We're pleased to be joined by the new head coach of the Beloit Lady Trojans, pending USD 273 board approval in May. But Keith Kersien is joining us now, the head coach of now the Beloit Lady Trojan basketball team. Coach, taking over for Shauna Remus, and obviously you had a chance to kind of understand what's going on here with the Beloit girls basketball program because you were an assistant coach here this past season. Obviously, we don't have to talk about your pedigree as a head coach. You have a great record over 12 seasons at previous school. You went 218-63 and led that team to a state championship and four state tournament berths. So obviously you're familiar with the girls basketball realm and had a chance to coach with Coach Remus to learn the Lady Trojans and the players that you'll have coming up. First of all, what led you to take this position and how excited are you to work with this group of Lady Trojans?
Well, I'll tell you, Dusty, I'm extremely excited and to be a part of Beloit Lady Trojan basketball. And, you know, just having the opportunity with Coach Jones kind of battling some health issues and stuff, being allowed to step in and help Coach Remus and Rao this season here, but taking over, you know, and it's, we got some good girls coming back. You know, we lost some good girls, but, you know, it's not about what we got, because no matter if the team would have been an 0-4 team, I'm one that's not afraid to get in there and take after. That's not what I'm about. I'm about the kids and trying to work and make them better, not only as basketball players, but as young women and growing up.
You've dealt with a vast array of youth here in North Central Kansas, between being a football coach and a basketball coach, track and field as well. I mean, you've kind of run the gamut here of all this here in the area. But as far as moving back to girls basketball here, what excites you about that part of it and having that varsity head coaching job and being able to kind of run that program again?
Well, you know, again, I'm just excited to have the reins, you know, working with Coach Remus and the staff this year here, learning a lot, you know, being around the bush for a long time. You know, old guys learn a lot, and I was thankful to learn what I learned with Coach Remus, and as well as getting to know the girls and the personalities. You know, I look forward, you know, there'll be some changes. I liked a lot of the things that Coach Remus did throughout the year, and getting to know that there, and it's like, wow, you know, my way's not always the right way, but it's my way. But, you know, trying to take a combination of what we are going to do and a little bit of what they have ran in the past, you know, to help with the transition, because that's the part with this team here. You know, we will have a good nucleus of great players coming back, but learning all new system and different thing, it takes a curve to throw out there and try to be as competitive as you can. So we might not start off breaking records to start with, but I've always been one that, you know, you improve throughout the summertime with my playing summer league, little MAYB, you know, working in the gym and in the weight room and preparing ourselves for next year as far as it comes fall, winter time, high school basketball, you know, getting the girls to understand the system, what their roles are, you know, because no matter what anybody's role is on the team, they have to understand that there, and for us to become the best we can, and then by Christmas time just continue getting a little bit better, and then the long stretch down the back straightaway going into the playoffs or what have you, that's when we got to be peaking.
I know you've had a chance here over the last 4 years to be the coach of the Beloit Junior High boys basketball team over there, and obviously that'll change a little bit with this move. But what's been the thing that stood out about you coaching those boys and then just being in the Beloit school district here for the last 4 years?
Well, you know, I've always kind of been in transportation and stuff. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I'm big on is, you know, getting to know the kids, no matter whether or not they're out for athletics or what have you, hauling them around and just getting to know the kids and watching them grow and mature. Junior high basketball, I've always liked it. You know, no matter what anybody says, junior high and elementary is when kids learn to enjoy the game, have fun, you know, but also that they're the coaches that work at them levels, you know, are great, you know. No matter who they are, no matter what system they are. And that's why working with the young kids and the junior high boys, trying to get them to be disciplined, and that's what I'd like to think any team that I've ever coached, we've always been disciplined, and if you play with discipline, you'll be playing in control, you will be learning your roles. But, you know, I'm going to miss the junior high boys. I always call junior high kids, boys or girls, goobers, you know, they're in that learning phase of the process of school and athletics and maturing, and you really influence kids' lives that way, and I feel like here at Beloit, the coaches that I've worked with at the junior high level and most every coach that I've coached with throughout my lifetime, we've gotten that across to the kids, and you know, just instilling them to become the best that they can be.
Keith Kersine, the new head coach of the Beloit girls basketball team here on the Sports Ticket. Coach, we're certainly looking forward to chatting with you about Lady Trojan basketball in the future here. Congratulations on this new gig, and best luck down the road here.
Well, I sure appreciate that. And, you know, we're going to work extremely hard, again, replacing a few girls. But we got girls that have played starting time, girls that played minutes off the bench. We got a great nucleus to build on. We got some good girls, you know, young girls, and our junior high program here at Beloit is just going to continue to thrive and feed on up. And, you know, I look for good things to happen, you know, as long as we can all get on the same page and come around and understand our roles, Dusty. And I'm totally excited. You know, again, our coaching staff, if I didn't say, we're looking to have Coach Jones and Coach Rao back and maybe even expand on that a little bit also. But, you know, just to give the girls the consistency of what they've had.
We're looking forward to it, Coach. Thank you.
Thank you, Dusty.
Keith Kersine, new head coach of the Beloit girls basketball program. We're happy for Keith, and I'm sure that Beloit girls will do just fine this upcoming season. Had a great year last year and certainly have a lot of talent that they can work with coming back next year. And as Coach Kersine alluded to, there's certain kids that you lose to graduation, but that happens every year. And I have a friend of mine that always says it isn't about who's leaving, it's about who's coming up. Because once they leave, you don't get them back, so you can't bring them back. They're out of eligibility. It's not about them leaving necessarily, it's about who's coming in. Now, I would say, obviously, a combination of both. You know, it's a star player that leaves. You're not just going to replace that star player. Or maybe you can. It just depends on your situation. So we look forward to having Keith as the head coach of the Beloit girls basketball program. And he'll do a great job. I am sure of that.
Yeah, I don't ever doubt that he's going to be there and doing things the right way and for the right reasons. So if all that plays in and he has the personnel to do it, should be a good marriage, as you would say, for Beloit and Keith Kersine.
I'm just going to say right now, the girls better be ready. I think, you know, I think they better be ready to go. He's going to be fired up, ready to go, first day of practice. And they better be ready. and you can't, listen, if you don't respect Keith Kersine and what he has accomplished as a coach, both, you know, on and off the court, and then the way he is respected and appreciated by so many people, and, you know, certain people didn't, and, you know, hey, one place's loss is another place's gain. That's just how it goes, you know. I know there are a lot of people over at St. John's are sick to their stomachs that Keith was no longer going to be coaching, and they're very happy for him now. even though they wish he was still there. And so, you know, that's what happens. Change is inevitable. There's constants in life, death, taxes, and change. And now Keith Christine is going to be head coach of the girls basketball program. And if you don't play for Keith Christine and recognize that he's got a state championship ring, that should demand instant respect. Okay, and his record at St. John's, and he's coached wherever he's been and whatever sport, he's been very successful. And then people, if you just talk to people that played for him, how much they respect him and appreciate everything that he's done. If you can't get ready to go and bust your tail for Keith Christine, then maybe you shouldn't go out. Maybe you shouldn't even, you should just step aside and cheer from the stands, because if you don't respect that man for everything that he's done, you better start learning. You'll find out.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we were talking off air. It's pretty obvious based on the things I put on my social media about Keith Christine, what people think about him.
Yes.
And it's mostly all good.
And it's not just Beloit. Yeah. It's from across our listing.
Yeah. You know, people that have coached against him in other places are reacting mm-hmm. to that. And people, whether it be football or basketball or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And they understand, he's a competitor. He's a guy that wants to win, obviously, but that's not all it's about for him. It's mm-hmm. about going out there and teaching kids the right way to do things mm-hmm. and being an example of that while also teaching them the game and being a coach. And you heard him say that on our cut this morning during that interview as well. So, you know, it is a situation that a lot of people are excited about, and there's a right to be excited about it for sure.
Yeah, and Coach Rima, Shauna did definitely didn't leave the cupboard bare. He's coming off a team that was, a team that won 15 games last year, and if not for a very tough, difficult sub-state, who knows, maybe could have made state. So certainly he's inheriting a pretty solid program, no question about that, and we'll see what he can do with the Beloit girls basketball program moving forward. And also, it's a special day for Keith, and he knows this. It's School Bus Driver Appreciation Day.
There we go.
And Keith does also drive the bus. Not only is he the founder and president of the Keith Christine Fan Club, he's also the bus driver of that club. I just made that up on the whim there. But, Keith Christine drives bus. Kyle Bisner in the back. Where you at? Oh, he's in the front driving the bus. That's what I thought. Kyle Bisner, athletic director, who wears many hats and does many things. He drives a bus. We know of lots of people that drive a school bus. Thank you to all those people that drive the bus respectively and responsibly so that kids can make it to their destination safely. But today is School Bus Driver Appreciation Day. And so Keith is one of those people that drives a school bus.
I was about a minute away from riding the bus with Keith during basketball season.
Road
trips.
When the station,
I was fully prepared to ride back with Keith that night.
The station car wouldn't start, and you were about ready to load up, and then somehow I got to start by slamming the hood. That's how technically great I am. We still don't know what caused that problem with the car, and I still think it's tied to moisture, but we don't get any rain. I don't know how to test it anymore. By the way, if you want rain, if you want some kind of severe weather, just go ahead and tell Kyle Bisner to schedule Abilene baseball anytime during the year. Because him and I were talking last night at the baseball games. The last two times Beloit's gone to Abilene, they haven't really played. One was storms, and they went down there and then didn't play. And then 2 years ago, a tornado came through, mm-hmm. and we started, and then they were taking shelter there, all the teams and players. And now, every 2 years, you go to Abilene. So now we're going to Abilene, and guess what the forecast is for Friday?
Thunderstorms.
Severe storms and 50% chance of rain. So if we need rain so desperately, little did you know that Kyle Bisner controls that by scheduling Abilene. So, or Abilene needs to make sure they schedule us. Because when Abilene and Beloit play and they don't play baseball, they schedule it and then rarely get to play because of the weather. And we definitely need some moisture and some rain. So that apparently must be the key. We shall see if it comes to fruition on Friday.
Yeah. I remember the 2 years ago thing, because that's the same day, always the same day as the Beloit relays, right?
Yep.
And I was trying to get out of here to go to Dallas that night and morning. And it was windy here, and it messed up our satellite. Thank God we don't have to deal with that anymore.
It was so windy. And so when we left Abilene, because we were going to pick up our son after the games, because he had a basketball tournament with SSA in Wichita, okay, the very next day, because that was a Friday when we were in Abilene. Mm-hmm. So we start the game, and the weather wasn't that bad, and we saw some clouds coming up. Next thing you know, they had a delay. And so, and we knew it was going to be a while. So anyway, we went, my other two boys, my wife and I, we went to eat at a restaurant. And then they said there's a tornado warning, and they announced at the restaurant, and everybody just kept going about their business. They didn't even move. Like, they just like, yeah, could I have some more steak sauce? I'm sorry, did you hear me? There is a tornado south of Abilene coming our way. That's great. Could I get some more ketchup? Nobody seemed to be, and it was like raining hard. There was a little bit of hail. So when we got finished, we were looking at the radar because I can stay on top of that's part of my job. You, of course, are well aware of that for all the severe weather coverage you do. So we might be more, we have maybe more access or nowhere to go to find stuff quicker than some regular Joes and Schmoes. And Janes and Does. So I look, I'm like, okay, I think we need to, I don't think they're going to play anymore today. And so let's go ahead. And we were contacting and communicating with our son and I think the coaches about getting our son. Well, they said they're basically on lockdown because of the tornado warning. So we couldn't pick him up. So we're like, we got to get out of here. And, you know, we don't want our car to get hailed on big time. So we drove and we went west back towards Salina. And you could see it all forming and everything to the south, southwest of Abilene, and not necessarily a tornado per se, but there was the chances, the radar was indicating the possibilities of it. So then we got to Salina and we waited at a truck stop or whatever. And then eventually they finally were able to let the kids go from the shelter, and then the bus stopped because they were going to get something anyway. It was super windy. I mean, windy. It was so dry. And so it was dust flying everywhere. And so the bus, we went over to where the bus was at, and we picked up our oldest son. He jumped in the car, and so then we traveled, you know, south to go to Wichita from Salina. And it was so windy, and there was so much dust that we literally, as my youngest son, that's his favorite new word, literally everything. Dad, I literally went to school today. No kidding. You don't need the word you literally. You just say you went to school today. But so we're going to Wichita, and I've never experienced this in my entire life, and I'm wondering if that was what it was like in the dirty 30s. Of course, you probably didn't have all the highway systems and stuff at that time. I don't know. I wasn't born then. But like, traffic came to a complete stop on 135 because of all the dirt you couldn't even see in front of you. And then all of a sudden, you'd start going faster, and then you could go a stretch and go regular speed. Next thing you know, everybody slowed down again because it was hard to see. And I'm like, goodness gracious, I hope we don't get rear-ended here. And then we got down to Wichita, and then there was a tornado that came through the Wichita area after we checked into our hotel. And it was a crazy weather day. And now they're talking about there's a chance for some major severe stuff across the Midwest coming up on Thursday and Friday. And here we are, going to Abilene again. So I don't know what the deal is, if we affect the jet stream by going there or what, but it was a wild day.
Yeah.
Like you said, you had the relays, and you were traveling, wanting to go to, you were going to Dallas, and that was a crazy day.
Yeah, it was. That was part of my thing, too. I was going to spend the night with my sister down at Newton, but there was stuff down there, like you said, you know, on the way. And I was like, I don't know if I want to go even to that part right now. So I left at like 1 o'clock in the morning because I knew I wasn't going to sleep. So right. I was like, see you later. I'm headed out.
I'm out of here.
But yeah, that was a wild night for sure. Because I had just finished relays and the severe weather came in. Mm-hmm. So I was on severe weather coverage right as I got back to the studio.
Yeah. Seems like the bullet relays usually have some weather issues, too. And, of course, that's Friday as well.
Usually they're cold or, rainy.
Yeah.
Last year was beautiful. Yeah, I think they forgot what was going on.
Perhaps.
The weatherman and the weather gods.
Fell asleep at the wheel. And speaking of bullet relays, that's how I have reports throughout the day coming up on Friday from the bullet relays there at Trojan Field in Beloit. This is a sports ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. We shift our attention to the Royals.
He sends one to center field. It is playable for Kiermaier, and the Blue Jays win it. Jordan Romano, career save number 100, and the Blue Jays take the opener 5-3.
Royals have now lost three in a row, four of their last five after falling to the Blue Jays last night in KC. Royals have won nine in a row at the K, but now have lost three in a row at home. Toronto jumped out to an early lead, a three-run triple by Bo Bichette on top of the first, two-run homer by Dalton Varsho, put him up 5-0 in the sixth. Mikel Garcia, two-run shot in the bottom of the sixth. He's been struggling at the plate, and then Kyle Isbell hit a home run in the ninth. Royals lose 5-3. Brady Singer, with his first poor start of the year, gave up five runs on five hits. He's now 2-1. Matt Cotrero on the offense, who that continues to scuffle a little bit.
The homers are nice. We just need to sustain some things and be able to score in other ways as well. You got to swing the bat or you're going to be behind. And tonight, when we swung the bat, we put it in play. They just, it was either right at them or it was a fly ball or whatever the case was. We couldn't string anything together.
Okay, so we talk about how baseball is a marathon, not a sprint. 162 games. And so early in the year, people were freaking out because the Royals' bullpen wasn't very good. Then the bullpen went 16 innings scoreless baseball during the stretch where the Royals were red hot. We talk about the Royals starting pitching. It's so awesome. Well, there's no way the Royals were going to keep that up over 162 games. We know that. Why are the Royals losing games right now? They've lost three in a row, four last five. Why? Well, yes, part of it is offense. It's kind of scuffled a little bit. You know the biggest reason why? Because the starting pitching has not been very good the last few games. Cole Reagans got lit up by the Baltimore Orioles, and the Royals are down 5-0 just like that. Seth Lugo gave up a couple of home runs. God forbid he had an average or bad start, first one all year. And Brady Singer's been absolutely fantastic, and he didn't have a good start last night. So there's four starters in your rotation, or three, I should say. Waka's last time out, he wasn't very good against the Mets. So that's four starting pitchers of your five. Their last outings have not been great. They haven't been horrible. They're not like the Royals in past years where you got to go to the bullpen in the third and you're down 12-1 and you're just trying to get through the game and save your bullpen. Now, these guys are still going five or six innings, so it's definitely a step in the right direction. But to expect the Royals starting pitching to keep doing what they had been doing during the first few weeks of the season was unrealistic. And so you come back down to earth. And you know, Vinny Pascatino was in a horrible slump, and now he's red hot the last 5 to 10 games. Mikel Garcia started your great. He was in a horrible slump until the last day or two. Every guy on your team is going to hit a slump during the season, a regular starter, whether it's a pitcher, whether it's a bullpen guy, whether it's a position player. Now, when I say slump, the slump might be two-game stretch. Like a bullpen guy might have two straight not good outings by his standards, and it might not even stand out to you that he's in a bit of a funk. You know, Bobby Witt Jr. might go 2-for-15 and you don't think much of it because it was only a span over three games. And then there's some that flat out have a 2-3 week long slump at the plate, or they struggle a little bit in the field, or starting pitcher has three straight non-quality starts. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Even the bad teams win 5-6 in a row during the course of a 162 game season. We've seen that with the Royals. So they're playing good teams. They're playing teams that have better pitching. So the offense is struggling a little bit more than against, say, the White Sox. And that's also helped the Royals. Almost half of their wins are against the White Sox, who have the worst record in baseball. The Royals, 6 of their 13 wins are against the White Sox. So that should be considered. I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer. I'm not trying to put down what the Royals have accomplished. But that is something that should be brought up is, hey, they're off to a nice start, but they've also played. The Astros weren't good when they played them, but they're, I think, going to be good at the end of the year. They caught them at the right time. The White Sox, that's a team that's not very good, and they've beaten them 6 out of 7 times. And that's what you should do as a good team, is take advantage of those matchups. But also, you know, have the Royals won a series against a really good team so far? The answer is no. Mm-hmm. They haven't. They didn't. The first series of the year, they lost 2 out of 3 to Minnesota, and then they've had a lot of injuries lately. They lost 2 out of 3 to Baltimore twice. Baltimore's won the AL East last year, won 100 games. And now they lost the opener to the Blue Jays, who are a very good team that's 13-10, and the Royals are 13-10 as well. So, you know, have they won a series against a good team? Unless you count the Astros, the answer is no. And the Astros are not off to a good start at all, so you can't really say they're good right now. You project that they will be because they usually always are. Mm-hmm. But technically, based on what the series have been and the teams and how they played so far, the Royals have not beat a good team in a three-game series yet.
No, that's what had somebody excited about, you know, their start.
And it's good to be excited about
the White Sox. And I was like, and kind of talking about, you know, how they had predicted the Royals were going to be way better than what some people thought. And I'm like, just lay back a little bit here. It's the White Sox.
Yeah, let it play out.
I'm like, I'm not trying to downplay it. I'm excited about it. And I will be excited about all the wins that the Royals get this year because they, I think will be better than what they were last year. It's hard not to be, right, with the way they started. But it's like, let's just cool it down just a little bit. And I was saying that, you know, when the day you were gone after they got the four-game sweep. And I'm like, let's temper the expectations a little bit. Don't get too high and excited here because they haven't really played anybody yet. I was saying that then, and it really hasn't changed yet now. So it is. You just got to go out there and continue to build and develop off of what you've done. But also said that at the beginning, too. It's like always pitching is usually ahead of the offense, right? Like those are the things that happen. So if your starting pitchers are, you know, average to very, very good, things early usually look maybe a little better if you can go out there and get offenses that aren't quite adapted yet and ready to go. And, you know, I think you're seeing a little bit of that, too.
Well, and you know, I don't have a problem. I'd almost feel guilty trying to temper Royals fans' excitement, even though I totally get what you're saying, and I agree with you in a normal situation. But the Royals have sucked the last few years, so it's like, why
don't
you know? So I think there's a balance there of you want to be the realistic person, right? But at the same time, do you want to be the guy that is just you know, messing up the whole, I'm finally excited about Royals baseball, and then you got to, like, rain on their parade immediately? Like, can we let them breathe and enjoy it, even if it is, like you and I know, even if it is against the White Sox that aren't very good or the Astros off to a rough start, can we go ahead and just let Royals fans at least enjoy these moments? Because maybe at the end of the year, they're going to lose 95 games, and we look back and go, yeah, well, we were right. They played some bad baseball teams, and thus they got off to a good start. Because the reason that Royals fans are excited to an extent, and I don't think they're as excited as maybe they should be, because I think of everything that happened with the vote in the stadiums and so forth and so on, and wanting taxpayer money, and then their TV deal sucks, and people can't even watch it. They can watch it. They got to pay for it, do this with Bally, who went bankrupt. Don't get me started on their TV stuff. It's not like it was when they were starting to get good in 13 and then 14 and, of course, 15. They had the best record in the American League. It's not quite to that point. But at the same time, there are people that are excited about the Royals because finally, instead of burying themselves in April, the Royals are having one of their better Aprils. Now, the Royals suddenly have lost three in a row. And are they going the wrong direction? Well, yeah, right now they are. But it's just a short stretch. The Guardians are off to a 16-6 start.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people expected that.
No, so the Royals are 3.5 out, even though they're 13-10. White Sox are 3-19. The AL East, Baltimore's 15-7, Yankees 15-8, Red Sox 13-10, Blue Jays 13-10. The Rays are in last place, and they're 12-12. So AL East is very good. Braves and Phillies off to great starts. The NL East 15-6, 15-8. And I talked about bad baseball teams. The Royals have 9 of their 13 wins are against the White Sox, which is 6 of those, and the White Sox are 3-19. And they had a 3-game sweep over the Astros, and they're 7-16. So the Royals, 9 of the 13 wins are against teams that have combined to go 10-35.
Yeah.
So that's why we say it's nice, but...
Yeah, and like I said that day, and like I say right now, I'm excited. Don't get me wrong. Like
they're way more competitive.
Yeah, they're competitive. They obviously, when we're talking about all that, they should have won 2 games in Baltimore that they didn't, that they blew, right? And and so they could have been like whatever 10-2 or whatever it was at the time. And it's like, you know, they had opportunities to do those things, and then they faltered in those, but still started very, very well, obviously. And for me, I was excited. I didn't want to say I wasn't, but you just, in my mind, you know how I how I revolve and in my mind, and you know, I got to see this thing happen over at least 50-60 games before I go too crazy about what is happening. And so, but yeah, I'm very, very excited for what the Royals are, you know. And I don't think this part of the process is where the Royals were at in 2013 when they were getting good either. We've not hit that part of the process with this group yet.
No.
And so I think if it continues to go on the same type of path, then there'll be a lot more excitement even from other Royals fans. Those other ones will jump back on that wagon and act like they've been Royals fans their whole life and start cheering again once they win, like every team gets. But right now it's... You know, as I said, they're going to have they had a 5-game winning streak. They're going to have a part of the season where they probably lose 5 or more in a row. And so
most teams do.
You just kind of roll with the ebbs and flows of it.
Well, the Blue Jays, that was a first of four, so they have three more with the Blue Jays. Michael Wacha is on the hill tonight, 1-2, ERA 3.75. Kevin Gausman, a rough start so far the Blue Jays. He's 0-2, ERA over 8. After the four-game set with the Blue Jays, they'll go to Detroit. Detroit has a winning record, 13-10, and they go back to Toronto for another three-game set. So the Royals are playing teams with winning records, you know, starting with Baltimore on Friday. They lost 2 out of 3 to Baltimore at home. They lost the first one to Toronto. So, you know, at the end of their upcoming road trip, they could be coming back home just in time for us to be there to see them play the Rangers for a Royals bus trip, and they could be under 500. It's possible because they're playing some good teams. So yeah, exactly. Hopefully they're not. And by the way, we do have some seats available still. If you want to go on the Royals bus trip, give us a call, 545-3220. We picked up the sign-up boxes. We picked out the winners. We're contacting them as we speak to let them know. And then we should have a few tickets left over to the public. If you want to go, give us a call, 545-3220, and we can tell you what it costs, what it all entails. The Dodgers, the best team that money can buy, is 13-11. But at the end of the year, I think they'll probably be in first. I'm just still going to go on a crazy limb. That's not how you start. It's how you finish. Did you see what happened in the Yankees game yesterday?
I actually did not.
Oh, my goodness gracious. So we talk about complaining about officiating. This one is like the most legitimate beef you could ever have with an umpire or an official. Okay? So yesterday, let me set this up. Yankees manager Aaron Boone has been ejected 34 times in his career. He earns it usually. Mm-hmm. Okay? He's no stranger to being ejected. Yesterday, he was tossed in the first inning of yesterday afternoon's game against the A's in Yankee Stadium. It's the 35th time he was ejected. So, obviously, he earned it, right?
Yeah.
No.
If it's that early, he had to.
No, he didn't. He didn't at all. In fact, what happened was there was a question on a check swing. The Yankees kind of appealed, and they, you know, just kind of said, hey, what about this, what about that? And so it was a little bit contentious at that point. And basically, the home plate umpire, and he got all this on the mic, so it was on the TV broadcast. So you hear the umpire talking to Aaron Boone, mm-hmm. and he says, not another word. You know, no more. So Aaron Boone shuts up. He actually did. He shut up. I mean, he's sitting there going, his first inning, you know, no big deal. I'll get ejected later in the game. So he's just at the top of the dugout. He's just chilling. And they got the shot on TV where it shows Boone in the dugout in the background. And anyway, somebody says something, and Hunter Wendelstedt, the home plate umpire, turns after he said no more. He turns, and he throws Boone out of the game. And he's like, what'd I do? I didn't even say a word. He didn't.
Yeah.
The cameras have all of this on tape. The audio is there. It's a guy sitting behind the Yankees dugout, a fan in a blue shirt that mouthed off to the home plate umpire. And Aaron Boone's telling him, like, Hunter, I didn't say a word. I listened to you. I didn't do anything. And Hunter Wendelstedt goes, I don't care. You're out of here. Well, no, you should care. You should barely care because you told him not another word, and he and his dugout didn't do anything. You threw him out based on what a fan said. And then after the game, he kind of doubled down like, you know, like he didn't care. It's like, you should care, because if you're going to throw people out based on what the fans say, what are you going to do? Throw out a player because you hear something from the stands as well? It was not a good look for Hunter Wendelstedt, the home plate umpire. Now, Aaron Boone has earned his ejections. But yesterday, I think it was after 5 pitches, he got ejected for not saying anything. It was wild, and it's all caught on tape. It is all there clear as day that some fan in a blue shirt was the one that mouthed off, and maybe they don't like Aaron Boone, and they were like, hey, man, maybe I can get him thrown out. I don't know. It's at Yankee Stadium. But Aaron Boone didn't say a word and didn't do anything. First time I see a manager thrown out for not doing anything. Like, he didn't even, you know, it's one thing not to say a word, but you give the umpire the bird, you know? Okay, you earned it. Or you did something, you kicked dirt on home plate but didn't say a word. Okay, that still gets you ejected, right? He was doing nothing. And I'm not an Aaron Boone apologist, but
no,
he was simply doing. Oh, heck no. I wish they'd throw all the players out and they forfeit. I'm cool with that. Go ahead, let all the fans say something bad about every player, and Hunter Wendelstedt will go, you're out of here. You're out of here. I don't care. Game over. I go home and have a brewski. But he threw out Aaron Boone because of what a fan said. Oh, my gosh. That's so funny.
That's wild, man.
It is. So he gets 35 ejections. Boone only earned 34 of them.
Yeah.
Two-time defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs have extended all of their top organizational leaders. You get an extension. No, you get an extension. Feels like Oprah. You get a car. You get a car. President Mark Donovan, general manager Brett Veach, head coach Andy Reid signed contract extensions yesterday. Reid's contract now goes through the 2029 season. But remember, Mike Florio said he was going to retire. Mike Florio is a doofus. Anyway, Chiefs chairman and CEO Clark Hunt said in a statement, Mark, Brett, and Andy have achieved historic success together. We are thrilled that they will continue in their roles for many years to come. They have been tremendous leaders for this organization on and off the field, and we look forward to their continued success in the years ahead, end of quote. Together since 2017, of course, Reid came in 2013, but in regards to Reid, Veach, and Donovan, when Veach became the GM, the Chiefs have compiled a team that has gone 100 wins, just 34 losses, 3 Super Bowl wins, 4 AFC titles, 7 straight AFC West titles. You know, I believe it's probably smart to take care of the people that helped you get to where you are. This is what you should do. This is the absolute perfect epitome of a business model that you should be following. And that is pay the people that got you where you got you. Big parts of your success. You know you wouldn't be where you are without these people. You take care of them. Thus, if they're happy, things tend to go a little bit smoother. Mm-hmm. If you have Mark Donovan, Andy Reid, or Brett Veach, any one of those three disgruntled, upset, ticked off, you've got a problem. So you've taken care of them. They're one big happy family. That's kind of why, you know, I think with the Chiefs, when people talk about, well, last 3 years, I swear, oh, we want OBJ. I'm like, I don't think he's a fit. I don't think you need him in your locker room. Maybe he's a great teammate and things have been blown out of proportion with him. There are other players that people talked about bringing in. I'm like, I just don't. The Chiefs aren't going to bring in a guy that's going to rock the boat. And if they do think that there's a little bit of risk, I think they think that, well, Mahomes and Kelce will put them back in their place, or Andy Reid. You know, Kadarius Toney was a bit of a, which, by the way, Veach the other day, and Veach I trust, but I guess I don't trust him on this one a little bit. Kadarius Toney, I think, could be a talented wide receiver. I think he is talented. I don't know if he's a wide receiver. I think he's a gadget player. But he's once again saying that he's got the most potential of any of the receivers they have. And I'm like, I don't see this, but whatever. I mean, you know, he could be wrong again on that, or he might be proven right, and he has tremendous patience. But 99% of the time in Veach, I trust, and if he thinks Kadarius Toney can help this team, I'm not going to sit here and tell him he's nuts, because he knows more about it than I do. I'm not an expert on it. I'm just a schmuck that's on the radio here in Glen Elder. That's it. But Brett Veach deserves every single penny. I've talked over and over it. Brett Veach doesn't get enough credit for what he's done. Brett Veach, I think, is the best GM in football. And I think he's got the best coach in football right now, and Andy Reid. He's got the best quarterback. That helps. Don't get me wrong. That helps. That helps. How many Super Bowls did the Chiefs win before Brett Veach was general manager?
One way, way, way back in the
Yeah,
day.
Right. But with this regime?
None.
Dorsey's regime? Yeah, none. How many with Alex Smith? None. How many with Dick Vermeil? None. How many with Martin Schottenheimer? None. So you've got a recipe here, and you've got an owner that recognizes it. You know, for these surveys or whatever coming out that Clark Hunt is, that comes across as cheap or whatever, listen, I don't think he's cheap. $500 million to a quarterback's not cheap. You know, giving Chris Jones a huge deal is not cheap. Going out and getting Justin Reid and getting other guys and making trades is not being cheap. Paying Andy Reid what he deserves is not being cheap. Paying Brett Veach, Mark Donovan. Listen, Clark Hunt knows he's making more money now than he ever did before. So he's got basically America's team right now. He's got the face of the National Football League. He's got Chiefs emblems on like almost every commercial now. If it's Mahomes, you immediately think Chiefs. You see Kelce now going to host freaking game shows. I mean, Clark Hunt's never had it better when it comes to his team and his organization. How could you? You've got 3 Super Bowls in the last, what, 4 or 5 years? 4 Super Bowl appearances last 5 years. You got back-to-back for the first time in 20 years in the National Football League and a chance for a three-peat. This guy's got to be flying on cloud 9. And the only thing that maybe brought him down was some weird little survey that talked about he didn't upgrade certain facilities. And the comeback that I've heard from people is, well, we've been winning and going so late into the season that we stay in the facilities longer. There hasn't been as much time to make the upgrades that we want, which maybe that's an excuse. Maybe it's valid. I don't know. But it's not like players are going around openly saying they hate playing for the Chiefs because the facilities are so horrible. So it's a weird kind of complaint. But that's the only thing that could possibly bring Clark Hunt down slightly. And here he is. He's like, you know what? What I love about Clark Hunt, and listen, he's a rich man. Clark Hunt is a rich, spoiled rich man. I just said it. Rich, spoiled rich man, for just double sakes.
he inherited a lot of what he got.
It was handed to him.
It was handed to him.
Part of it, for sure.
Clark Hunt is, he really was born with the golden spoon in his mouth. I think literally that's possible. Now, having said that, just because he inherited all this doesn't mean he's a doofus. Okay? Now, some people are, and they could somehow blow everything. But what he does that is smart, and this is what I appreciate about Clark Hunt that Jerry Jones has never understood. And I think it's a big reason why the Cowboys are held back the way they are. I truly believe this. And you can call the Cowboys America's team all you want. I don't know how you're America's team when you haven't won a damn thing since 1995. But, you know, I appreciate Clark Hunt because even though he's a billionaire, even though he can go around, puff out his chest, and act like he's taller than 5'3", which I think that's about his height. And no offense, I'm not trying to make fun of short people. I'm just saying that he isn't a super intimidating guy. And sometimes people that are shorter have a bigger ego than bigger people. Mm-hmm. I know a few to come to mind right off the bat, and Dusty knows one in particular. So that's in the sports world. So, you know, Clark Hunt, he doesn't have press conferences after the game, and I know Jerry Jones is the GM and the owner. Well, there's part of the problem. You should be the owner and let somebody else be the GM. But Jerry Jones, he's the rich man that has the oil money, as the Hunt family had oil money, and, of course, from Texas. And Jerry Jones made all his money and did this and did that, and he owns the franchise. He can do whatever he wants. But I think Jerry Jones prevents his team from really accomplishing what he truly wants to accomplish according to what he says out loud. But since he's a GM / team president / owner, whatever, he's like got more press conferences after games than the actual players and head coach do. You never see this with Clark Hunt. And granted, you don't see that with a lot of owners. But what I like about Clark Hunt is he is behind the scenes. Like, he was all on board saying, we can't let Andy Reid get off a plane and leave Kansas City. We can't him get on a plane and go to Arizona to try to interview there. I mean, think about this. Back in 2013, and this is how the story goes, is that Andy Reid was let go by the Philadelphia Eagles. He had schedules and visits with I think, three NFL teams. And the Chiefs, I believe, was the first one he talked to. He had a scheduled interview to go to Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And Clark, it's been told by, I know Mitch Holthus has talked about, the voice of the Chiefs, and there's others within the Chiefs organization have talked about how Clark Hunt said, listen, Andy Reid's the guy for us. And we cannot let him leave here without locking this up. We can't let him go to Arizona and consider not being the coach of the Chiefs. Clark Hunt should get credit for that. Because where this franchise changed, and everybody sits here and talks about the Mahomes trade, and it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true that that was a huge moment in Chiefs history. Nobody can deny that, obviously, when you get your franchise quarterback after failing to draft one in the first round for some 30 years. But, you know, a lot of people, let me give you a comparison. So a lot of people point to the Royals winning the World Series in 2015. And they say, well, obviously the big move, the big trade that the Royals made that changed everything was getting James Shields and Wade Davis and trading Will Myers. Right? That was the trade.
Mm-hmm.
And what they forget is the trade that actually changed everything well before that trade was Zach Greinke being disgruntled, not wanting to play for a losing organization anymore, which you couldn't blame him. And the Royals traded Zach Greinke to the Milwaukee Brewers for a couple of guys you may have heard of, Alcides Escobar and Lorenzo Cain. That trade is what changed the Royals franchise.
Mm-hmm.
The trade a few years later was a move that helped cement that they were a contender. Without the first trade, the second stuff doesn't even happen, probably. Now, let's go back to the Chiefs. The Mahomes thing is pretty, you know, obviously is big and huge and changed everything. But does it happen if Andy Reid isn't the head coach? Because Andy Reid was hired in 2013 because of the owner insisting that Andy Reid doesn't leave Kansas City. He cannot go on a plane to go interview with another team. We've got to lock him down now. He made a quick, calculated, obviously threw enough money out at Andy Reid. And they made a compelling case to say, Andy, it's a great situation here. And, oh, by the way, you can go get your quarterback. And then they traded for a guy named Alex Smith. Now, why did Alex Smith come to Kansas City? Andy Reid. And Andy Reid made Alex Smith a better quarterback than he was in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt. And then when the Chiefs knew that they had gone too far, or not too far, but they'd gone as far as they could. And then for crying out loud, the first year Andy Reid was the head coach of the Chiefs, they went from 2-14 to 9-0. With Alex Smith, a new quarterback who they traded for. How do I know this? It was the first year we became an affiliate for the Chiefs. in 2013. I was like, wow, we're an affiliate and the Chiefs never lose. How great is this? Of course, then they got knocked out in the playoffs like they usually did. But Andy Reid being hired set the whole table, and that was because of Clark Hunt. He was willing as an owner to go ahead and do what he had to do to keep Andy Reid in Kansas City, hire the man. Andy Reid then goes out, immediately goes 9-0 with a quarterback the Niners didn't even want anymore, and Alex Smith. Then, fast forward a few years later, Andy Reid, Brett Veach, and let's slide into Brett Veach now. So Andy Reid gets a big contract extension yesterday, and he deserves it, no question about it. If you don't sign Andy Reid, none of this other stuff happens. That was the first step, well before Mahomes being drafted. The second step is Brett Veach. Brett Veach, everybody thought, I think we even talked about on our show at the time, we were worried that Brett Veach would be Andy Reid's lackey, that he would just do whatever Andy Reid did, that Andy Reid would be the de facto general manager. We were wrong, and happy to be wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because Brett Veach, although he works very closely with Mark Donovan, team president, Clark owner, Hunt, the owner, and works closely with Andy Reid, the head coach, Brett Veach has made some shrewd moves. And the best move he's ever made is he identified Patrick Mahomes when he was a freshman in college. And he just was all about Patrick Mahomes. There was something Brett Veach saw in Patrick Mahomes that he loved. And he was continuously in the ear of Andy Reid and John Dorsey. Okay? And he was able to convince the Chiefs, this is the guy you want. We've gone as far as we can with Alex Smith. I think everybody knew that. We've got to go get this kid. We've got to go get him. The Saints might take him at 11. Drew Brees getting a little bit older. A lot of word was that the Saints were going to take Patrick Mahomes. Or Deshaun Watson, and the Chiefs jump 17 spots. That does not happen without Brett Veach. Brett Veach doesn't happen without Andy Reid. Then, of course, you get Mahomes, and then none of all this stuff, none of the Super Bowls probably happen without Mahomes because he's the final piece, right? So these guys, the owner, Clark Hunt, should be given a ton of credit, whether he inherited all that he got money-wise, which I think he kind of did. He's actually still an astute businessman. He's smart enough to understand that I am not the life of the party. I am not the reason Chiefs fans watch Chiefs football, unlike Jerry Jones. Like, I don't have to be front and center after a game when things don't go right or we get knocked out of the playoffs. No. I've got a guy, Andy Reid, that can take the shrapnel because I hired him. That's part of his job. And I don't worry about the draft too much. If somebody runs into me and wants me to ask my opinion, I might say something. But Brett Veach is our general manager. You know, does Clark Hunt come in and say, listen, we're hosting the draft like he did last year, and we're not trading our first-round pick because we'll piss off everybody in Kansas City waiting for us to pick a K-State guy with the last pick of the first round? Yeah, I think it was pretty clear Clark Hunt was like, you can't trade the first-round pick this year because we're hosting, which I get. I understand. Does Clark Hunt step in sometimes and say, maybe, no, we're done with this? I'm sure with the Kareem Hunt situation, Clark Hunt said, no, we're done. We're done with him. You don't get rid of a running back that had the success that Kareem Hunt did without the owner signing off on it. He's the ultimate where the buck stops here, right? Well, Clark Hunt hasn't sit here and this is what some business people have done in this country, and it's a gigantic mistake, and they pay the piper, and they deserve to pay the piper. And that is, when you have so much success, you start to think that you're the reason. You start to think that you're bigger than you really are. And then you start to think, you know, I think we can win. You know, I don't know if we really have to have Andy anymore. Or, you know, I don't know if we really have to have Mark Donovan anymore. You know, I don't know if we... I think we could still be good if we have a different general manager. If Beach walks away, he asks for too much money, I think we can be fine. You start to get this sense of nothing can go wrong. We're shatterproof here. The Chicago Bulls made the mistake. If you watch the dance... You could argue that the Patriots, I don't think the Patriots necessarily did, but Brady could have still been there if they really wanted him. You know, instead they parted ways. So the Chiefs, of course, are in the prime of their run. There's no doubt about that. But Clark Hunt deserves a lot of credit, whether you think he inherited all his money, which I think he did. He still understands the business model. And he's sitting there going, I'm going to take care of the people to help me make a lot of money. Andy Reid's made Clark Hunt money, okay? Brett Veach has made Clark Hunt money. Mark Donovan has made Clark Hunt have money. Patrick Mahomes has helped Clark Hunt make money. And thus, Clark Hunt has not had a big problem, it doesn't sound like, of taking care of these people and saying, listen, we're going to go ahead and give you an extension before your contract's going to run out. That way there's no stress of, oh my God, you're going to be a free agent at the end of the year. Now, that happens with, you know, Chris Jones, clearly, and other things. And they took care of him, didn't they? Patrick Mahomes, we're not going to ever worry about him getting to the last year of his contract. That's never going to happen unless he suddenly gets hurt and or whatever. Andy Reid, we're going to take care of him before he even thinks about leaving. We're going to take care of him if he even thinks about retirement. Andy, Mike Florio has to be full of crap, right? Yes. Yes, he is. Okay, good, good, good. Well, even if he isn't, or if he is, let's get together and work out a deal here. Let's take care of you because you brought some Lombardis here to Kansas City. Clark Hunt gets it. And when the top of the line CEOs and owners of companies start to think that they're invincible, even though they don't realize that you didn't have the success you had until you brought these people on, there are people that have a big enough ego that have the gall to think, you know, I think it's time for a change just to make change, because I'm just curious if we can do this without those people, because now I'm kind of jealous of them. We've seen this in the real world and business. We see it even in local communities, and we see it in sports. And I think Clark Hunt, like I said, I wish I was in his shoes where, you know, he didn't have to worry about anything when he was growing up. And I'm sure he did worry about something. But, he, you know, I mean, he didn't have to worry about a big house. He didn't have to worry about toys. He didn't have to worry about, you know, living paycheck to paycheck in his entire life. But at the same time, he is at least smart enough to understand, maybe he learned it from his dad, Lamar, that you take care of the people that have helped you be successful. And the Chiefs organization and their franchise is way more valuable now than it was before Andy Reid came to Kansas City. It's way more valuable now than it was before Mahomes was drafted. And there's nothing, there's no reason at all not to take care of the people that you have in big-time positions. And that's what Clark Hunt did yesterday. He took care of Brett Veach, Andy Reid, and Mark Donovan. And if they're happy, Clark Hunt's happy, and your quarterback's happy, you're in pretty good shape.
I would say the probably the biggest thing Clark Hunt learned from his dad was his loyalty to his people, right?
That's right.
And Lamar was loyal to a fault.
He
like,
was.
Carl Peterson was in his job way too long. And
he had a five-year plan to turn into 10 that didn't ever happen.
You know, Marty Schottenheimer probably would have been into his job for way too long. You know, I think Marty, he decided to step down. And, you know, there may have been a little pressure when that happened, but I don't know if it was or not. But Marty stepped down, and I think Lamar was loyal to him too. And so it's a lot easier to be loyal to your people when they're winning three Super Bowls, four AFC championships, and seven straight division titles. Like, it's real easy to be loyal to those people because they've gotten you to the promised land multiple times already. The thing I love about the Chiefs, and the thing I will say I love about Lamar Hunt is he's present, too. Like, he's at the games. Mm-hmm. His whole family's at every single game. I know because I follow his daughter on Instagram, and she's always posting stuff from the sideline. They're at every game, right? And so, you know, they're there and they're present, which has not always been the case with some other owners over across the parking lot, right?
Yes.
They're not always present. They want to make decisions. They want to benefit from it, but they're not always there. The Hunt family is there. They're part of it, and they have their fingerprint all over it. But the thing I love about Lamar and the whole structure of everything that or about Clark Hunt and the whole structure of what the Chiefs are doing is that they have a defined role for everybody in their organization.
Yes.
They have a president that takes care of daily operations.
Yes.
They have a GM that takes care of personnel. They have a coach that takes care of the personnel that the GM gives him, and they all do it, and they all do their separate thing.
How many
franchises have a president and a GM doing the same job, and they're doing the same thing that Mark Donovan and Brett Veach are doing, but they have to do it all themselves? They've
got
to make personnel decisions, mm-hmm. and they've also got to make day-to-day operation decisions.
And Jerry Jones being GM and owner.
And Jerry Jones doing all of it,
which
except coaching, right?
Right.
And it's like,
well, he may even do that.
Yeah, he probably wants to do that. But I think that's the biggest reason they've had success is Mark Donovan does not have to worry about personnel. Brett Veach doesn't have to worry about hiring somebody to do this job inside the offices of the Kansas City Chiefs. He's got one thing he's got to worry about. And the thing that's always been wild about this to me is when you kind of go back and think about this, we all thought it was weird when the Chiefs fired John Dorsey in June.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they get rid of him. They let him do the draft, which they got Patrick Mahomes in, and fired John Dorsey in June mm-hmm. to go to Brett Veach. And it's like, what are we doing? That's kind of a weird timing to be doing this. Training camp's coming up in less than a month. What are we doing? And then, but now, as you look back at it, it's like, well, Brett Veach had his fingerprints on 2017 in the draft, too, and probably was the biggest reason they got Patrick Mahomes, but it was, you know, already starting to do some of those things, and that's probably where they're like, well, we trust this guy with what we need to do. And John Dorsey was not a salary cap wizard like Brett Veach is, right? Like, he had big problems with the salary cap, Dorsey did.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got a guy that understands all that part of it, too, and has a huge group of people that help him out with that. And I think that's always key. You got to have people that are helping you. at every level, whether you're the president, whether you're the GM, whether you're the coach, because Andy Reid doesn't do it all by himself either. No. So it's they delegate well. They have three guys that do three separate things at the top, and that leads to the success that they have because there's not a lot of stress put on any of them if they just do their job.
I'll take it one step further, and you make an absolute fantastic point. It's called a clear organizational structure and hierarchy. That's mm-hmm. what that is. And everybody needs to know what their roles are. And if there are murky overlapping of roles, then you cause what? That's my job. No, that's my job. And then you get offended, you take it personally, or you step on people's toes. And that's the last thing you want. But I'll go one step further in what you said. I'll go within your own coaching staff. Andy Reid doesn't tell Steve Spagnuolo what to do.
No.
He brought in Steve Spagnuolo and he said, it's your defense. I hired you to do a job. Andy, of course, part of that is he loves to do the offense. Mm-hmm. We get that. But Andy Reid trusts Steve Spagnuolo because he's dealt with him and had him, worked with him before. And he said, listen, I need to improve my defense. Bob Sutton is out. And I got Steve Spagnuolo, which Clark Hunt, Brett Veach, and Andy Reid all agree that's the guy. Obviously, we said at the time, that's the guy. And now look how it's turned out. Mm-hmm. Thank God. Maybe thank God D. Ford was offsides in the AFC title game so that they got rid of Bob Sutton. But he lets Spags do what he does, and if they need to talk a little bit about, hey, how are we going to address this? Do we want to go ahead and blitz on 3rd and 10, or how's our offense playing compared to the defense? What did we say this year about the Chiefs that made them so interesting, even though the offense struggled a lot this year? They complemented each other, mm-hmm. right? The defense, the offense complementing each other, and that's exactly what Steve Spagnuolo does for Andy Reid. They complement each other, and that's exactly Eric Bieniemy, even as offensive coordinator. They complement each other. Matt Nagy this year, they complement each other. Dave Tobe, he has his job. They complement each other, just like Brett Veach at GM, Mark mm-hmm. Donovan at president, Clark Hunt at owner, and Andy Reid do at the top of the structure. They complement one another from that standpoint. And yes, they might even give each other compliments too, a different compliment. But that is the key to being successful in business and honestly in life. You have to have structure. I don't know how people do anything successfully without any structure and no organization. I think you're just completely, you're like a chicken with your head cut off or you're chasing a tail between your legs. I am one of those people. I'm not saying I'm brilliant or smart or anything like that. There are many people way smarter than me and I'm way dumber than a lot of people. But what I will say is that I am a person that, and this is because my mom and dad, I learned from them and I think they've been successful people. There's always people more successful, people less successful. But one of the things that I learned from them is organization. My mom had a list. She always had a list. Now, it was a little bit super ODD or AD, whatever it is. Super
OCD.
There you go. Yeah. OCD. Weigh myself. Okay, mom, I don't think you need to remember to weigh yourself, but that's a little bit too specific. Mine is never like, get up, go to the bathroom, and brush my teeth. That's not on my list, okay? But I have a list. Every day for work, every day I do something, even if it's on the weekend, there's things I got to do. I make a list. One of the reasons I do that is because I'm getting older and I forget mm-hmm. things, okay? But in order not to forget things, I make a list. I don't know how many times I've woken up at 2:30 in the morning because, I'm older and have to go to the bathroom. I get up 3 in the morning, whatever it is. It happened just the other night. I get up. My brain can't shut off. I'm thinking about all these things. You know what I do that usually works? Usually. Is I get up and I either write it down on a piece of paper, the things I'm thinking about, because I think part of the reason why I can't fall back asleep is I'm worried I'm going to forget some of the things I'm thinking mm-hmm. about. Or I'll type it in my notes section on my phone. And then I go back to bed and I feel better about myself from the standpoint of, okay, it's there. I'm not going to forget it. It's not mm-hmm. going to go off to space and wonder, what was I thinking? What was I going to do? Organizational skills are paramount to being successful in whatever you do, whether it's to make sure that your kids get to their events on time, whether it's your kids are able to maybe do their homework at the right time. If you have a structure like that, if you have structure as to electronic time is this time, dinner time is this time. Some people are a little anal about some of that stuff, but there's at least structure. And sometimes your structure gets absolutely erupted and blown to smithereens. Trust me, we know this a lot, as do most families. But the point I'm trying to make is those that are successful organizations, in particular big businesses like this, you have to have a hierarchy. You have to have clear roles. You need to know what each person can do. Do you overlap sometimes to help somebody? Sure, that happens all the time. But you're exactly right. Andy Reid knows his job is to do what? Be the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs and make sure the offense is ready to go. That's his job. Okay, Steve Spagnuolo's job is defense. Dave Tobe's job is special teams. Matt Nagy's job is to work with Andy Reid on offense. Is it Matt Nagy's job to delve into what Dave Tobe does on special teams or Steve Spagnuolo? No, stay the hell out of it. You stay in your lane, I'll stay in my lane, we'll work and we'll complement each other. right? Is it Chris Jones's job to tell the Chiefs what play to run? No, his job is to shut up and sack the quarterback, right? And they know that. These players, even when things went bad last year at times, did the players point fingers? Did they get out of their lane? Well, they didn't publicly. And some teams, you see that happen. And I think that's a reflection of your top part. If Jerry Jones is going to throw somebody under the bus at the Dallas Cowboys, you don't think a player says, well, I guess I can do that too.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to smaller levels we talked about when teams and players take on the reflection or our reflection of their coach, whether it's high school, junior high, it doesn't matter. And as a parent, that can even apply too. But the Chiefs have a hierarchy that works. So here's the thing. There's an old slogan. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Clark Hunt gets it. It ain't broke. I don't got nothing to fix. And if I even think there's a shade of thinking about I'm not getting paid enough, I'm taking care of you guys right now. And he did yesterday.
Yeah.
And he should get credit for that.
For sure.
Now, there's another organization that's to the west that really doesn't have as clear of a hierarchy, and hell, they don't even know who their quarterback's going to be, but maybe they do now. The Denver Broncos have just traded for Zach Wilson, who was the number 2 overall pick in the 2021 NFL draft. There is no doubt the Broncos have solved all their problems, and I hope the Chiefs are ready for their run at being the winner of the AFC West come to an end, because the Broncos clearly have the inside track now. I will say this. I think Zach Wilson is more talented than people give him credit for. I think Zach Wilson didn't have the most healthy situation in New York. And I think he can be successful with Sean Payton. I think he could be. I don't think he's the answer full time, but he might be. You don't know. We've seen quarterbacks struggle early in their career and then turn it around. And we've seen some complete bust. Zach Wilson is 24 years old. He's headed to Denver as the Jets trade him to the Broncos. The number 2 overall pick, all that the Jets got for him was in exchange. They got a 6th round pick and gave up a 7th. You talk about a guy's value going down the toilet. The Broncos, dire need of a quarterback because they released veteran starter Russell Wilson, who's with the Steelers now, and Jared Stidham was the only quarterback on their depth chart. So now they got Zach Wilson, and then they are drafting number 12 on Thursday. The Chiefs draft number 32, if you didn't know. Final pick of the first round. Denver has the 12th overall pick. Perhaps a quarterback will be there for them to draft and develop. We shall see. But Zach Wilson, you know, there's a reason he was number 2 overall pick. He was highly thought of. He was a very good, talented quarterback. Perhaps he just needs a change of scenery, much like Justin Fields does at Pittsburgh. And I could see Justin Fields being very successful at Pittsburgh, maybe after a year. Russell Wilson, 1 year. Justin Fields a backup. Next thing you know, Fields is the guy. I think he's got talent. I think Zach Wilson has talent, too. I know people are making fun of the Broncos for this move, and I know I just did. But I will say, and all kidding aside, there's no risk here. There's no risk. I mean, you're getting a guy that, you know, that's the thing we talked about with the Kansas City Chiefs, Kadarius Toney. Why did the Chiefs trade with Kadarius Toney? All they had to do is give up a 3rd-round pick for a 1st-round talent. Kadarius Toney was like the 20th, 21st pick, whatever it was. He was a 1st-round pick of the New York Giants. The Chiefs got a 1st-round, and that was only a couple years ago. They got a 1st-round talent for a 3rd-round pick, and actually I think there was even like a swap of picks. Here, the Broncos are getting a guy at one point considered the number 2 overall pick in the draft, one of the best quarterbacks in the college football. And they're getting him at the age of 24, where he's still young, and all they had to give up was a swap of a 6th and a 7th. So if you're a Bronco fan, you're all mad or upset about this. And if you're a Chiefs fan making a lot of fun of it, which I get, I will say he's not 34. The one move that made totally no sense with the Broncos, one move, they made tons of dumb moves, but trading for Russell Wilson immediately was stupid. Like, why are you going for a guy that's declining? Seattle doesn't even want him anymore. Geno Smith was better than Russell Wilson as a backup as last year anyway, and then proved that when he became the starter. Then the Seahawks got the Broncos' top 5 pick last year because the Broncos weren't, you know, they gave it up to get Russell Wilson. On top of that, they compounded their mistake by giving him a ton of money, which what did you see that he did the first, you know, it was weird. And so if Bronco fans are up in arms about Zach Wilson, this is nothing. You should be still ticked off of what you did to put the franchise in a hole by trading for and then signing Wilson to an exorbitant amount of money. The Zach Wilson move here by the Broncos, honestly, is smart from the standpoint of if you don't work out, big deal. We swapped a 6th and a 7th. That's it. And if he works out, it's a great steal. And we didn't trade hardly any capital. And they agreed, the Jets and the Broncos, to split the pay that he's owed. So you don't even have to pay the full $5.5 million. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's really not a bad idea by the Broncos to take a flyer. It's really not a lot different than the Chiefs taking a flyer on Kadarius Toney, except the Chiefs actually gave a higher round pick for Kadarius Toney.
They need help at the quarterback position, and they don't just grow on trees, and you can't just go make a move.
And Sean Payton's offensive mind, I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you do with what you can and make deals with who's available. And, you know, that changes down the road at times, and you get a chance to get an aging Russell Wilson or whatever you might do. But this is what's on the table for them, and it is easy to make fun of because Zach Wilson hasn't had a lot of success yet. But it's also easy to see why the Broncos would make a move, because they need guys in their room.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not giving up hardly anything to do it.
Absolutely. NHL playoffs in the East. The Hurricanes went up 2-0 on the Islanders with a 5-3 win. Maple Leafs beat the Bruins 3-2, tie their series 1-1. First-round openers in the Western Conference, the Vegas Golden Knights won 4-3 over the Stars. Oilers took a 7-4 shootout against the Kings. Four Game 2 matchups take the ice tonight. In the East, the Rangers up 1-0 on the Capitals. Game 2 at 6. At 6:30 tonight, the Panthers are up 1-0 on the Islanders. In the West, the Winnipeg Jets hold a 1-0 lead over the Avalanche with Game 2 at 8:30, while the Canucks are up 1-0 on the Predators, and the puck drops at 9 o'clock for Game 2 tonight. The Kraken do not play until next season. I would say release the Kraken, but that would be stupid.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.